Hey folks, if you haven't tried Audible yet, what are you waiting on? You've heard me talk about it for a while now. Audible offers an incredible selection of audiobooks across every genre, from bestsellers to mysteries and thrillers, true crime and more. Audible is the home of storytelling. You'll discover thousands of podcasts from popular favorites to exclusive new series. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. But members also get full access to a growing selection of included audiobooks, Audible originals, and podcasts, and you can download or stream those included titles all you want. And the Audible app is great. Makes it very easy to listen anytime, anywhere, whether you're traveling, working out, walking the dog, or just doing your chores. Right now, I'm listening to a thriller titled Then She Was Gone by Lisa Jewell. It's absolutely amazing. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/TCAT or text TCAT to 500-500. That's audible.com/TCATT or text TCAT to 500-500. Everyone, and welcome to episode 138 of the True Crime All the Time podcast. I'm Mike Ferguson, and with me as always is my partner in true crime, Mike Gibson. Gibby, how are you?
Hey man, I'm good, man.
That is great to hear. You and I have not gone that long without seeing each other.
No.
Because the way that we taped last week and this week, I'm going to go watch my daughter dance in Gallenberg, so we're having to get ahead, but I'm glad you're doing well.
Well, good. I'm glad you're doing all right, too.
No, my throat's much, much better.
Yeah, it was a little scared.
So I think we're back on track. Got some really good feedback about the Patreon episode with Kuklinski and our TCAT and our TCAT Unsolved episodes last week.
They're glad that I'm on the second episode finally.
Yeah. Well, you're not.
Well, I'm on the second episode only on Patreon.
On Patreon, yeah.
New and improved, and
yeah,
good stuff in there.
And I will say, you and I have a lot of things going on after the weekend of the 13th. That's Chicago True Crime Podcast Festival,
right?
Which you and I will be at.
Sure,
we're going to have a lot more time. Things are going to get back to normal. Hopefully, we're going to get into some video. We got a new podcast coming out.
Yeah, it's funny that you think we're going to have all this extra time.
I always say that.
And then you're like,
if we start, you know, some of these new podcasts that we're going to do.
But it's going to be good.
Yeah, it will be. It will be. All right. We had some Patreon supporters, some new ones. Jody Hills.
Hey, Jody.
Nicole Smith jumped out at our highest level.
Hey, thanks, Nicole.
As did Steve Smerick.
Hey, Smerick.
Florin Fisher.
What's up, Fisher?
Allison Thompson.
Hey, Allison.
Jillian Jacobs.
What's going on, Jillian?
Janet Sweet.
Hey, Janet.
Danielle Dimtrack.
Dimtrock.
Simon Siegel.
What up, Simon Says?
Lisa Banks.
Hey, Lisa.
Faith Mattingly.
Ooh, Faith, that's a good name.
Yep. Rosalie Brown.
Hey, Rosalie.
Trey Washington.
What up, Trey?
Laura Martinez.
Hey, Laura.
Lily Salazar.
Salazar.
Robert Mellon.
What's going on, Mellon?
Gina Della Vecchia.
Ooh, Della Vecchia.
That's actually the perfect place for that accent.
Yeah.
Alina Millette.
Hey, Alina.
Caitlin.
What up, Caitlin?
Bender Dalliwall.
Ooh, Dalliwall.
Yep. Okay. Claire Lego jumped out at our highest level.
From the Lego fame and fortune.
The famous Lego family.
Wouldn't that be cool, though? I'm just saying it would be cool. I wonder, like, the house, the mansion is, like, made out of Legos. Like, everything. Real Legos, man.
Sure.
Yeah.
Why not? Why wouldn't you?
Yeah, exactly.
I know there are full-size houses built out of Legos.
Really?
Uh-huh. I've seen them on TV.
Oh, that's cool.
With working toilets and everything, I think.
Man.
I don't know how you do all that stuff, but
be fun for a night.
Yeah, I don't even know if it would. I guess it'd be fun to walk through and see.
Yeah.
I don't really want to use the restroom on a Lego toilet.
Well, that's because you're worried about where the pieces knobbies come together.
Yeah, the knobbies.
The knobbies are even just where they come together. They might grab your skin and pinch you.
I don't need that.
Yeah, that's not good for anything.
Ashley Richards.
Hey, Ashley.
Aaron Louise.
What's up, Aaron?
And Tommy and Nikki Evans.
Hey, the Evan family.
The Evans family. So then if we go back into the Vault Gibbs.
All right.
This week we selected Katie Morgan.
Hey, Katie.
Been with us a long time. We appreciate that.
We do.
We had some great PayPal support as well. Sarah Gudenkoff.
Oh, Gudenkoff.
Yep. Jean Oliver Philippe.
Oh, Felipe.
Made a sizable donation.
Thank you.
Jonna Barham.
Hey, Jonna.
And Stephanie Hopkins made a very sizable donation. So
Hopkins fame and hospital?
No, it's actually K-I-N-D-S.
Oh, Hopkins.
Kins.
Yeah. Gotcha.
So we appreciate all that new support.
Awesome.
All right. On True Crime All the Time Unsolved, we have an episode out right now on Kirstie Bentley. We're going to New Zealand.
Going to Down Under.
Where?
And over.
I like the clarification of and over.
Yeah, and
cause,
over.
Because I don't think they call New Zealand Down Under like they do Australia,
no,
do they?
No,
they don't. So you're just like, it's Down Under. And then it's over.
Yeah, go down and then over and you find the little Kiwi.
But this story of Kirstie Bentley... she was a 15-year-old that went missing while walking her dog on December 31st, 1998. It's one of the most high-profile, biggest unsolved cases in the history of New Zealand.
Yeah, heartbreaking.
It's heartbreaking, but we've got some suspects. And yeah, we're going to be talking about some people that may or may not have had something to do with this disappearance. So definitely check that out. All right, Gibbs, are you ready to get into this episode of True Crime All the Time?
Let's do it.
We're talking about Tyler Hadley. And I want to start this one out with a 911 call. But first, I want to give a big shout out to Lana Hyatt for her help in writing and research of this case. All right, Gibbs, let's hear this 911 call.
It's not an emergency, just it kind of is. Just someone had a party tonight and someone reported that this kid had killed their parents.
He told me that the kid had up, and he was like, he told me the gist of it, that he did something to his parents. And I was like, bro, I don't want to know any details. He said he already called and reported everything to Crime Stoppers. I was just calling because I felt like I needed to.
So what got me about that one is the girl talking in the beginning. She's like, well, it's not really an emergency, but there's talk of this kid that killed his parents. That to me is an emergency. Something is going on that needs
immediate attention.
Immediate attention. Critical attention. It's an emergency. But this is the story that we're talking about, right? Tyler Hadley. It revolves around a 17-year-old kid who murdered his parents and then throws what you would have to consider a kegger, a bash, a huge party at his house after he has killed them. So you have all these kids drinking and milling around while his parents are laying dead in one of the bedrooms. This is the story we're talking about.
So bizarre.
It is. All right, let's talk about Tyler Hadley. He was born on December 16th, 1993, in the town of Port St. Lucie, Florida, to Blake and Mary Jo Hadley. And I think Gibbs, right from the start, this kid had a lot of issues as a baby. Number one, he was premature. He only weighed 3 pounds, 10 ounces at birth. Very small.
Yeah.
Had to be kept in an incubator for a month. Now, he was born to parents that really loved him. I think that much is clear. His mother, Mary Jo, was a school teacher. It was said that, you know, she felt guilty that she couldn't be with her son constantly. I think, especially given the fact that he had all these issues, Tyler had an older brother, though, named Ryan, who was 6 years older than he was. But Ryan didn't have all these same type of issues. And maybe it is all of this combined, right? Maybe it has something to do with the fact that Tyler was premature. Maybe it's just part of his makeup, but he was definitely very close to his mother. He was a mama's boy. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah.
There are stories of him as a child, as he was growing up, essentially people saying that he was constantly clinging to his mother.
Just like doting on her?
Yeah. Yeah. Would, you know, do anything she asked and was just always wanted to be with her.
We had kind of had a story like that last week where the individual wanted to constantly be with his mom.
Yeah, we did. Now, as he started to, you know, get a little bit older into his childhood, we're talking elementary school age, there were some changes that people began to see. He was still a loving kid, especially to his mom, but Tyler started to withdraw from others. For one thing, he suffered from anxiety, which a lot of us do, a lot of people. And I don't know if it was solely based on that, but, you know, he stopped playing sports. He quit basically all the hobbies that he was into. He would start projects but not finish them. Now, in a move that sounds somewhat like myself, he tried to play the drums. He tried to play the trombone.
Yeah.
Gave up on them fairly quickly.
So like you, a starter but not a finisher.
Yeah, he's a starter.
Yeah.
He was also in the Scouts.
Well, that's close. You were in the Weebelows.
You said we below.
Yeah.
Like below, B-E-L-O-W.
Oh, yeah, is that what it sounded like?
That's funny. It was around the same age that Tyler met his best friend. This is a kid named Michael Mandel, who we will talk about, you know, a bit more later on. But we're talking 10 years old, right? This kid, Tyler Hadley, is struggling with damn near everything. He had acne. He had severe depression. Like I mentioned, he had anxiety. He had a thyroid condition.
Well, it can't make you feel good about yourself with all that going on.
No, no. And I think he definitely had very low self-esteem. I even read that, you know, he had some bouts of bulimia. So a lot of stuff going on in the life of a 10-year-old kid. I mean, this would be a lot to handle for anyone, but especially at 10 years old, you're not equipped to handle even one or two of these things.
No, you don't have the skill set yet.
So to help him, his parents, you know, because they did want to help him, they were doting parents, took him to doctors, started him on medication. But one of the things that I read was that his mother started making Tyler take growth hormones, which I found odd.
Yeah.
You know, I guess she thought that it would boost his confidence. It would stop him from being bullied, being teased in school. I mean, I think at the time he was a rather short kid. He was a little pudgy. And so I think her thought process was, we need to get him bigger, taller, stronger.
Into some Huskies?
Into some Husky size jeans. Because when you're wearing the Husky size jeans, you're the king of the playground.
You are, man. Or I was.
You are the bodyguard in 3 o'clock High.
That's right.
Don't which does not it. Exist. But people got a kick out of that last week.
Did they look it up?
I'm sure they did. You know, more so on the Patreon, but it did spill out over into the regular episodes.
It's a good movie, man. Whatever it's called.
It's called My Bodyguard, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, I think you might be right.
I still haven't looked it up, but I'm pretty sure that's what it's called.
It would be funny if it was actually called 3 o'clock High.
It's not called 3 o'clock High. And maybe a lot of this has to do with the thyroid condition that Tyler was diagnosed with. But he too, he wanted to be tall. Right? He didn't want to be a short kid. He didn't want to be the kid that was going to be pushed around. He wanted to be like his dad. His dad was 6'1". So I think what you have is a kid that, and you mentioned it, Gibbs, has low self-esteem, lacking in confidence. And I think kids his age really started to notice Tyler's behavior, mainly how clingy he was towards his mother. Yeah, boys love their mother, but they're not holding on to their legs and being dragged around the house.
No.
And when you're, you know, 10, 11, 12, whatever age you want to talk about, you pretty quickly notice the kid who is way too close to his mother.
Yeah, I know your mom still is like, Mike,
yeah,
get off my leg, please.
Yeah, my mom has to smack me every now and then.
Yeah.
again, all goes back to self-esteem, right? He is constantly asking his mother for some assurance that she loves him. Most kids just kind of realize, hey, my mom loves me. She takes care of me. She helps me out. I don't need to ask her 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 times a day if she loves me.
Do you love me? Do you love me? Do you love me?
Mommy. Mama. Mama. Mommy.
Perfect.
There was a friend of Tyler's that came out later and said, one time he saw Tyler tell his mother to shut up. And immediately after that, he broke down in tears. He was so upset that he apologized. He just couldn't believe the words had come out of his mouth. This is how he acted towards his mother. And I think to other people as well, right? Neighbors regarded him as this sweet kid. They would let him house sit. He was a reliable youngster. Let's put it that way. But the medications that Tyler was taking, they didn't seem to be working the way that everyone had hoped. By 11, 12, 13 years old, so we're talking middle school, right, time frame, he was getting into a lot of trouble, defacing public bathrooms, you know, defacing people's cars with paint,
oh, wow,
shoe polish.
He was all over the place.
Breaking windows, stealing Christmas lights. I mean, just being a little shit, basically. You know, just messing with people's stuff. But it's also around this time, Gibbs, that Tyler began to self-medicate. It's a big problem.
It's a huge problem.
We know it's a big problem. I think probably even more so today. At first, it was alcohol, right? So he's drinking alcohol to, I guess, numb the pain, make the pain go away, whatever you want to call it. It's a pretty young age when you think 11, 12 to be drinking.
Really young.
Yeah. I mean, I started drinking pretty young, I'll be honest. But I wasn't sitting around having a sixer, right? I would steal little bits of, you know, get me a little shot of Johnny Walker.
Yeah.
Steal it and be like, I got a little shot.
Is that the laugh you did?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or, you know, you're at a party and you're finishing off some of the adults' beverages when they're not looking and
just falling right behind them, picking them up.
But I, you know, when I think of somebody that's self-medicating at this age, they're drinking on a regular basis. And 11, 12 years old, that is very young.
It's not like you're drinking a fifth a day at that point, you know?
No. No. I think one of the big turning points was around age 15. So by then he had turned to marijuana and was getting into, you know, as 15, 16 year old, was getting into pills. So we're talking about some opioids now. We're talking about Percocet, Oxy, all kinds of other ones that I'm not even sure what they are.
Washing down with a little alcohol too.
And maybe, right? Which makes it doubly dangerous. There was a neighbor that talked about a time when she saw Tyler in this wildlife preserve somewhere near their house, but I guess he was smoking a joint. And this neighbor was like, okay, this is Tyler. I think this is a good kid.
Yeah.
I'm concerned about him. So she told his mother. His mother didn't believe it. No way. So his mother had the attitude of, no way, not my child.
Yeah, he's not going to smoke no joint.
He's not going to smoke that Mary Jane. Not my son. He's no Gibby.
He's no Gibby.
So because of that, she doesn't confront him, right? She doesn't do anything because she doesn't want to believe it. It was about 2 weeks after this. Tyler and some friends, they dragged a couch into this wildlife preserve, put a bunch of gasoline on it, and lit it on fire.
So they just dragged the couch out into the woods, huh?
And lit it on fire.
That's like Duck Dynasty meets Jackass.
A little bit.
Yeah?
A little bit. But here's what I think, Gibbs. I don't know that everybody understands what gasoline will do in certain situations. You know, you pour a bunch of gasoline on a couch, and it will go up in a hurry.
Oh, yeah.
And I think it got to be much bigger than they imagined it would be.
Big old flume.
Because the fire department had to be called out. And so obviously you get the fire department, you get the police.
You're not supposed to be setting couches on fire. They get a warning. Yeah, not that big a deal in the grand scheme of things. Yeah.
I've been given warnings for worse.
And I bet you've given warnings for worse.
Oh, I have.
You've received warnings and you've given warnings.
I'm a giver and a receiver.
The one thing you do not want to get is a warning from Mike Gibson. It's terrifying.
It really is.
It's always the people that somewhat quiet, somewhat aloof. Those are the ones that are super, super dangerous. And when they really come down on you.
That's it, man.
It's scary.
When I finally break.
Watch out.
Watch out.
So Tyler gets into high school. And I think you and I have talked about this before. I loved high school. High school, to most people, can either be the best time of your life. It can be one of the worst times of your life.
Yeah, I mean, it was a little difficult for me, you know, because I went through such a young age, me and Doogie, but, you know, it's what we had to do.
I thought you were going to say it was so tough because you had to go through that one grade three times.
Oh, but, yeah. You didn't see that one coming, did you?
No, I didn't. You actually beat me to the punch. But it can be, right? And it all depends on, you know, your station, sometimes how you view yourself. Your self-esteem level and how other people view you and how you think they view you. A lot of dynamics going on in the high school world.
Yeah, definitely. Builds into your character and your confidence and all that.
For Tyler Hadley, it was, I believe, a pretty major struggle. Classmates described his behavior as bizarre. There's one story of him in biology class just mooing. He just began to moo.
Oh, got milk?
You got milk. You're not going to have a good high school experience if you're that kid.
Yeah, if that's your thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So there was a kid in my high school whose thing, because some kids had a thing.
Right.
His thing was trying to kick the clocks. Now, this is back in the day. Now they're all digital.
Right.
Usually they're pretty high up. These were those big round non-digital, you know, right. Had the hands, but they were still, you know, they were higher than your head. They were 7 feet probably.
Right.
So he would run Breakfast Club style and try to jump up and kick these clocks. He wasn't very good at it.
Yeah.
And he just kept falling, kept hurting himself. But that was his legacy. This kid was known for that.
He's like, hey man, you see him out? You're like, there's a clock over there.
I bet you can't kick that clock.
He's like, let me try.
And I'm not trying to be mean towards this kid, but if you are that person, I think high school is going to be rough for you. You're not being voted most likely to succeed. You're not going to be on the homecoming court.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, you know what? Be yourself.
Be yourself.
But
is yourself trying to jump up and kick all these clocks?
Yeah, maybe think about what you're doing first.
Or are you doing that for some type of attention?
Yeah. It's not like me sitting there, you know, doing a Billy Jack. You know, at lunchtime, like, hey, watch this, guys. Do you remember Billy Jack?
Oh, yeah, I do.
I'm going to put this side, this foot on that side of your face. It never worked out that way, by the way, just so you know.
Oh, Billy Jack. So he's mooing. He was described as extremely hyper.
Yeah.
To the point where this is the type of kid that would distract an entire class. Right? If you're mooing and just can't sit still, it's going to be hard for the other kids to learn. There are some parallels here to Jeffrey Dahmer. You know, Dahmer in school had a thing where he was always trying to get attention.
Yeah.
He was seeking attention. And for whatever he could, whether it was the strangest behavior, you know, whatever it was that was going to get him attention is what he would do. But Tyler started to skip school. He was hanging out with a rougher crowd, struggling grade wise. Again, this has to be like looking in the mirror for you. You know, all the things I'm saying about this kid.
Yeah, nice. Thank you.
You and Doogie.
Hey, me and Doogie, man.
Sitting outside and smoking in your truck.
We were, man. It's gonna be a rough year, Doogie. He's like, I know Gibbs.
It's a wonder Doogie was able to power through. All right, so let's talk a little bit about Florida, right? Vacation, home of 18 million retirees. I don't really know what the number is, but a lot of people retire to Florida, right? Port St. Lucie, Florida. it's been said, is known for two things, or was known for two things, maybe still is. Number one, the New York Mets have their spring training there.
Okay.
And number two, there is a lot of weed grown in and around Port St. Lucie, Florida, apparently.
There's a lot of buds going on, huh?
Yeah, and I think there's a lot of kids with nothing to do but sit around and get stoned. I mean, I think at one point there was so much pot in the town that they referred to it as Pot St. Lucie.
Probably making people up in Portland jealous and Denver and where all that other pot is at.
Pot everywhere. Now, granted, this was a little bit different time, right? This was way before all these states got super progressive and,
right.
You know, pot was pretty pretty illegal everywhere you went.
It's when you had to find me and I had to get out of my locker.
Exactly.
What do you want? Dime, nickel, quarter? Just joking, Mom.
And you walked around with it stuffed in the front of your pants.
Yeah, it helped.
So I read somewhere, and I don't know what time frame this is. This could be back then. It could be now. But, you know, 69 different marijuana farms.
That's quite a bit, actually.
Seems like a lot in that county. And again, I think it's important to say, right? Weed was not as accepted. It's getting very accepted these days.
You can go to different like festivals, craft shows,
sure.
And not that I go to craft shows or anything like that, but if you did, you can find
you can get a doily, edibles. You can get a doily and a pot brownie.
That's right,
and that's what Gibbs does in that order. He picks out his doilies and then he gets himself a pot brownie,
and then go home. It's a good day.
You walked right into that, dude. How are you getting the edible if you're not at this festival?
I set myself up.
You did. But let's get back to this marijuana, because it's not the marijuana. It's the mixing of the marijuana, the alcohol, and really the prescription medications. You know, alcohol and opioids, and it's just, there's nasty side effects from some of that stuff for sure. And eventually it became too much, to the point where even Tyler's mother noticed what was going on, right? She really tried to turn a blind eye to it, to say, no way, not my son. He wouldn't do these type of things. I think at some point she finally had to admit it, but she was still hopeful. A friend of hers said that her outlook was, no matter who you were, even if she didn't like you, she would never give up on you. And of course, she's not going to give up on her son. She's going to fight for him. She had fought for him since the day he was born. She would do whatever she had to do to get him back on the right track. And she started with simple things, you know, keeping closer tabs on him, taking away privileges like his phone or his car. I mentioned his mom was a teacher, had been a teacher for 24 years. So it's not like she didn't have some experience dealing with kids with behavioral issues. But the problem was, every time they tried to hold Tyler accountable, he just became more upset. His behavior became more erratic. He's no longer a little kid, Gibbs. You can't put this kid in the corner in a timeout.
No, timeouts don't work.
You know, he's 6 foot tall, 160. Not that that's going to scare anybody, but
no,
he's an adult.
Like I said,
essentially size wise.
Yeah, somebody that age, timeouts just not going to.
No, it's just not going to do it. You know, she was checking the school every day to make sure he got there. Was using the GPS tracking on his phone, which is something I like to do.
You do quite a bit.
Somehow I got your phone company to put it on mine, so I know where you are too.
Yeah, it's been a problem.
It has been, because you've been at some questionable places.
Yeah, you know,
mister.
Sometimes you just gotta, you know, change the way you do things.
But I will say this. My wife's a teacher. I've said that many times. I think she would be the first to admit that getting your own kids to do what you want them to do can be more difficult than getting the kids at school.
Oh, I believe that. I mean,
to do what you want them to do.
Just raising my own kids, you know.
Sure.
Good kids, but I'd send them over to their aunts or uncles or whatever, or I'd meet their best friend's parents. They're like,
did you just say you would beat their best friend's parents?
Meet?
Oh, meet. Okay. Yeah.
unless I needed to meet them.
Where, you know? Why? That came out of the blue.
Yeah. So I meet their best friend's parents, and they'd be like, "Oh, he's the greatest kid, man. He was like doing the dishes. He was mowing the grass." I'm like, "What? Are you talking about my kid?"
Exactly.
He got up and did your dishes and mowed your grass, and you didn't even have to ask him. Okay.
That's what, you know, everybody said, and I have great girls, and you know I do.
You do.
But they can be a pain in the ass, just like any kid.
Yeah.
But when you talk to, you know, their friends' parents when they stay all night, oh my gosh, they were so great.
Yeah.
It's just the way kids are. They start to tune their own parents out. But the other thing I will say is there are some actual deterrents at school, right? There's detention, there's suspension, there's things like that.
Right.
You can't suspend your kids.
No.
You can take stuff away.
Though, could be fun trying.
To suspend them.
I'm sorry, little Mike, we're going to go ahead and suspend you.
You're not allowed in the house for 3 days?
Yeah.
You got to sleep in the backyard?
Please exit, and you can come back in 3 days.
But what can you do to your own kids? You know, now, some people might say you can whip the shit out of them. Some people don't believe in that.
Right.
In some places, that might get you a visit by child services. I don't know. But, you know, for the most part, you take stuff away. It used to be we'd take their phone away. Okay. Yeah. Well, now they got 18 different things that'll pull up Facebook and Instagram. And
you just
got
to shut down the whole web, man. And how do you do that?
I can't, because that's where you and I need,
we need it
to do all the bar work.
Take the door off their hinges. Remember that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, springtime is all about fresh air, fresh starts, and freshly cleaned homes. And it's the perfect time to give a fresh look at Simply Safe Home Security, the only home security system I use and recommend. Springtime also means more time outside and away from home. And I trust Simply Safe. I love the myriad of features that they offer. And I love the price. Simply Safe was named Best Home Security Systems for 2024 by U.S. News & World Report. The system blankets your whole home in protection. There are so many sensors, from detecting break-ins, fires, floods, and more. Plus, they have a variety of indoor and outdoor cameras to keep watch over your property day and night. It's backed by 24/7 professional monitoring for less than $1 a day. So you get fast emergency response and dispatch when you need it most. There's no contract, and they have a 60-day money-back guarantee. So you can try Simply Safe risk-free. Don't absolutely love it? Send the system back for a full refund. Simply Safe has given Gibby and I and many of our listeners real peace of mind. We want you to have it too. Get 20% off any new Simply Safe system when you sign up for Fast Protect monitoring. Just visit simplysafe.com/TCAT. That's simplysafe.com/TCATT. There's no safe like Simply Safe. True Crime All the Time is sponsored by BetterHelp. I want to ask everybody one question. How is your social battery right now? Does it have a ton of energy, or are you drained? And why is it at that level? You know, it can be easy to ignore our social battery and spread ourselves thin. What's the right amount of socializing for you, and how do you recharge? You know, maybe you're the type of person who thrives around people, or maybe you need some more alone time. Therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. I think therapy is a very powerful tool for learning positive coping skills and helping to empower you to be the best version of yourself. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. No more hopping in the car, driving, and sitting in a waiting room. You can do your entire session from the comfort of your own home. All you have to do is fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist, and you can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/TCAT today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/TCATT. So these are parents that are struggling to control their son. And it's important, right? In late April 2011, Tyler was 17 years old. He got into a fight at a friend's house. Must have been a pretty bad fight because he got arrested and was charged with aggravated battery, and he had a juvenile record. He had been convicted for burglary years before. So because of that, he was sentenced to a week in jail, followed by 2 weeks of house arrest.
Dang anklet thing, man.
I know.
I'm telling you.
You love that. You have a lot of experience with that. But you know, what's this going to do to his mom? His mom is losing her, you know what? So she tried to take away his phone. Well, then he started using the computer, Facebook Messenger, to communicate with people. That's like I said, kids, they find a way around everything.
Oh, absolutely they do.
But he's getting more and more upset with his parents. He's starting to resent them for, you know, taking away his privileges. And this resentment started to grow. And I mean, like, very quickly. It escalated. He started talking openly, Tyler did, to his friends about how much he hated his parents, about how he wanted to kill them. And he did tell some of his friends that he wanted to take his own life. He's given off some very, very serious red flags. But most of his friends thought he was joking, right? Based on his personality, the way that he had talked in the past, they thought that he was just blowing smoke. I think it's easy to do. And I think a lot of people do it and they regret it later on, missing the signs, not taking action, right? And sometimes at the moment, it doesn't feel like it's that big a deal.
Right.
It's not till after something really horrible happens that you realize, hey, I wish I'd have done this, this, and this, but it's tough. Tyler later saw a psychologist after all this is going to take place. And he would tell this person that the murderous thoughts started small, like in the back of his brain, right? Just little itty bitty thoughts.
Yeah.
Of probably, what would it be like if they weren't here?
If you don't weed that garden, man, it's going to grow.
What the frick does that mean?
Negative thoughts, man, in your head.
You got to get the weeds of the negative thoughts?
Yeah.
So you got to get the weeds out.
Exactly right.
So what can grow?
So the positive stuff grows.
The rest of the things in your head?
Yeah.
So this is what I'm thinking, right? These thoughts started small, and he would have them every now and then. But they began to increase in frequency.
Have you ever looked at anybody and said, man, I wish you were dead?
Have I?
That little thought.
I think I'd be lying if I said I didn't. Yeah. I hadn't.
Yeah. Was it recently?
Was it today? It was not today. Okay. So you're not in any danger.
Okay.
I can't think of a specific time, but I'm not ruling it out. Let's say that. I can't pinpoint the fact that I have done it, but I won't rule it out knowing how I am.
Yeah, I've never done it. That'd be really weird.
Oh, okay, because I can think of some drivers that I guarantee you.
Oh, I'm sure.
In a road rage incident,
yeah.
I have said, you know, I hope your car blows up by the time you get to the next stoplight. Like, and I'm laughing, and I shouldn't laugh because that's not a nice thing to do. But everybody that listens to this podcast knows that I have road rage.
You do. You're like, roll. You hope the car rolls.
And I don't. I don't handle it well.
Yeah. If you could have a little button, you make the tires blow right at the right time.
Put an oil slick down like James Bond.
Absolutely.
So he's having these thoughts. Started small. They started getting bigger. He started having them more often.
So just the frequency is just compounding.
I think the thoughts are happening more and more. And I also think they're increasing, right? His obsession with wanting his parents dead is increasing. He told the psychologist, at a certain point leading up to the murders, he thought about killing his parents every single day.
Wow, man.
I mean, this is not once every 6 months, get in this big blowout fight. I wish you were dead. And then it goes away. Every day he is thinking, I've got to kill these people.
Yeah.
That is a scary, scary thought.
Oh, it's very scary, man. He's actually planning things out in his head.
Around June, we're still in 2011, right? Everything is taking place in this 2011 timeframe. Around June, Tyler's older brother, Ryan, moved out. We mentioned he was quite a bit older. So he's in his 20s, right? He moved out to pursue his career. And also, I think he had a relationship, but he moved to North Carolina. I think this is a big deal. And we'll get to it a little bit later when the murders happen. But I think Tyler's brother moving out kind of started some things in motion. All right, so Ryan moves out in June. July is a very busy month. Mary Jo and Blake admitted Tyler to a substance abuse program. Again, they want to help him. These are not neglectful parents.
No, very loving.
Very loving, yeah. But they're trying everything. They're seeing him spiral. They want to get him help, but he's not seeing it that way, right? This is the problem. He's not seeing it as they love me, they want to help me. His resentment towards his parents just increases.
Yeah.
They're messing with me.
You're interfering with my life.
They're making me do something I don't want to do.
Just let me be me.
But what's strange in this scenario is his mother, Mary Jo, apparently was not on the same wavelength as her son, right? Her son is bitter, resentful, doesn't want to do the substance abuse program, is not doing it. Meanwhile, somehow she is telling her friends that he is, quote, over the hurdle.
Like he's into it? Like he's over the hurdle, meaning he's accepting, he's moving forward with it?
Like he's already done.
Oh.
Like he's happy now. He's made it through this. He's kicked the drugs.
We finally got past it all.
Yeah.
Life's good.
Like she is not seeing this as reality, I think.
Okay, so she wants to live the leave it to Beaver.
She does. And she wants him to be the all-American son. Mm. The problem is he's not. And not many kids are. She's just not seeing what reality is. She's seeing it. She's seeing an alternate reality for sure. Because at the same time, Tyler is telling friends that he wanted to kill his mother. And one time after she took his cell phone away, he messaged one of his friends and said, LOL, yup, she's a see you next Tuesday, I'll call it, faux show. This is a little hard for me to read, but faux show, I might kill her. I get it, Gibbs. My kids get upset with me. If I thought for one second that they were messaging a friend saying that they might kill me, I would be mortified.
Oh, yeah.
I'd be like, how have I gone so horribly wrong?
That you want me dead.
Right. What have I done? But this is where Tyler is at.
And kids will say that, right? I mean, I wish you were dead.
Oh, sure.
You know, how hurtful could that be? I mean, that's very hurtful.
It is.
But actually,
I wish you weren't my parents. Yeah. I wish you were dead. I've heard. But that is different than I might kill you or I'm going to kill you. Those, to me, those are two different things.
That is.
And over a cell phone, right? You're going to kill your mother because she took your cell phone away. Just a week later, Tyler, his dad, and his grandfather, they all went to Georgia for a family reunion. Apparently, no issues, right? On this trip, no issues with his parents. But we're getting into an area after they get back that is just a few days before the murder. And it's believed that Tyler hid some implements of murder in his bedroom. A framing hammer, a knife, some shears that you might use to cut.
Like 10?
No, I was thinking, you're thinking 10 snips. I was thinking more like shears that you would cut a hedge.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Those kind of shears.
Yeah.
Still both brutal, but right. Those 10 snips are very brutal.
They can be.
Oh my gosh. The stories that you tell,
I'm just saying.
I can't even repeat them.
Sometimes you need to do a little snip, snip. They come in handy.
July 15th, the day before the murders, Tyler actually met with his psychiatrist, who would later recall that there were no signs. Tyler showed no signs of psychosis, but later on, Tyler tried murdering his parents for the first time. He was ready to kill them as they slept. He stood over them. He held what I believe was the hedge trimming shears, was going to plunge them into his mom and dad, but he couldn't go through with it.
Pretty brutal.
That'd be a brutal way to die. A very brutal way to die. So he's gotten close, but he did not go through with it. The next day, July 16th, 17-year-old Tyler Hadley has finally made the decision, Gibbs. He's going to kill his parents. His parents spent that morning going to a local farmer's market. His mother, Mary Jo, was 47 years old, had worked as an elementary school teacher for 24 years.
It's a long time.
By that point. Started when she was 23 almost exactly the same as my wife. His father, Blake, was 54 and had worked as a nuclear power plant engineer for 30 years.
Wow.
So, you know, you talk about these people. These are not people out doing drugs and, you know, leading a high-risk lifestyle. These are people trying to raise a family.
Yeah.
Working their ass off at jobs for 20, 30 years, doing what they're supposed to be doing. Now, like a lot of kids his age, Tyler poured out a lot of his thoughts on Facebook. We've seen that with some of the cases that involved younger kids. They weren't shy about a lot of them about what they put out on Facebook.
No.
Knowing that, hey, somebody's going to read this, right? There's going to be a record of this. It's not like it goes away. He had already been talking about killing his parents prior to this day, had talked to friends and, you know, just a lot of people. But on this morning, he's talking to friends about actually going through with it. And then he's telling them he's going to throw a big party. And in some of the messages that you read, some of his friends are cheering him on.
Really?
Oh, I mean, it's sickening to read some of these messages where, you know, he says, today's the day. You know, one of his friends has said, you know, are you sure you can really do it? He said, yeah. The other friend says, well, you got to go through with it this time.
Got to do it, man. It's important to do it.
I mean, it's just really, so either they thought he was so full of shit, he was never going to do it, or they were really egging this kid on to murder his parents.
You think, you would hope they were just like messing with him.
Yeah, but even that's, you know, obviously it's poor decision making. Sure. But when you're talking about 17-year-old kids, yeah, they don't make great decisions anyway.
No, they don't. Unless they were us at 17.
Oh, man, I was, God, I made so many bad decisions. It's a wonder I didn't end up in jail. Probably you too.
Well, or maybe one of us did. I don't know.
Maybe. Those records are sealed because we were juveniles.
Exactly.
So 11:25 a.m. Tyler texted a friend saying that his parents would be gone later. So you can look at that a couple different ways. Then he talked to his good friend, Michael. We mentioned Michael up front. And this is the first time that day that he told Michael that he was definitely going to kill his parents. Now, Michael was his best friend in the world. Did not take him seriously at all. Number one, I think he'd heard this before. And I think he thought that his friend liked to rant and rave, but was ultimately never, ever going to actually do this. By 1:15 p.m., Tyler Hadley posted on Facebook, quote, party at my crib tonight, ... maybe, which is somewhat cryptic, but apparently Tyler had been saying all week at school that he was going to throw a party because his parents were going to be out of town.
Yeah.
Now, the problem is not very many people knew who he was. He was not a popular kid. Yeah. So it wasn't like him saying this was going to draw a huge crowd.
Right.
But, and you remember, Gibbs, anytime anybody said, my parents are going out of town and I'm going to have some beer. You know, it didn't matter if you knew that kid or not. There was a chance you might go to that party.
I'll be
for
there.
Sure.
Bring some of my friends with me.
So this day is progressing. Shortly before 5 p.m., Tyler takes his parents' credit cards and phones and he hides them. He takes 3 ecstasy pills.
Okay.
Which seems like a lot. I don't know a lot about ecstasy, but that does seem like a lot.
Seems like it might be overdoing it.
I thought that was like a one pill type of thing.
Yeah.
He listens to some rap music and then he goes to get his hammer. Now, we got to talk about the house a little bit, right? Hadley's lived in a ranch-style home, everything on one level, and Tyler does not wait. I think from this point, when he took the pills, he's probably pretty whacked out pretty quickly.
I would guess so.
When he got that hammer, the decision was made, I think, in his mind, Gibbs. There was no going back. He was able to get behind his mom, and he attacked her. He brought the hammer down repeatedly. And he would say later on, his mom said, why, Tyler? Why? Because obviously, eventually, she turns around. She knows who's attacking her.
Sure.
But he doesn't stop. And he uses both sides of this hammer, right? He uses the flat end that you would use to knock a nail in.
Sure.
But he's using the claw as well that you would use to pull a nail out. And I think you have to picture this scenario. This is not just a man attacking a woman. This is a 17-year-old kid attacking the woman, his mother, that loves him more than anything. And she's seeing her son rain blows down on her in a fury.
Yeah, it's got to be difficult, man. Can you imagine your own kid coming at you?
I can't. And he doesn't stop. I think he hits her around 37 times. And this is probably the hardest part to take of all. When the coroners are able to review Mary Jo's body, they estimate that she was alive, Gibbs, for every one of those 37 blows.
She felt every one.
She felt them. She saw the majority of them. She saw who they were, you know, being delivered by. She ultimately died later, right, from the blows. But to be alive and feel all of that, know who is behind it. And I think to add on to that, there is evidence that after the blow stopped, she made an attempt to crawl away from the spot in the house where Tyler left her. Brutal. Brutal to think about. Oh, yeah. But it doesn't stop there, right? Obviously, Tyler's dad is there as well. He comes out of the bedroom. And again, this is something that you have to imagine. Imagine opening the door. You're hearing all this commotion. You find your wife bludgeoned to death. Your son is standing over her. I'm sure he has to be covered in blood.
Oh, blood and maybe some matter.
Oh, I'm sure. And he's still holding this hammer.
Yeah.
So his dad is kind of thunderstruck. And my assumption is he's probably doesn't make his decision as fast as he would like to, because he's still trying to take in what the hell is going on. When he finally does turn to run, Tyler's already hitting him. And again, while this attack is going on, he's asking Tyler, why are you doing this? And what Tyler would later say is that he responded with, why the fuck not? I mean,
yeah,
you just don't get any more callous than that.
That's just like saying, because I can.
Yeah, because I felt like it. And this is not a small guy, right? His dad's like 6'1", 300 pounds. And he's fighting Tyler. But the problem is he's being rained down on with this hammer. The autopsy would later show that he had broken bones in his leg, a broken nose, just a whole bunch of injuries that were consistent with a person fighting for their life.
Well, I think he took like 39 blows.
He did. 39 to the head and the torso. And again, the coroner would say both sides of the hammer, right? The claw and the round head. But this didn't take long. You think about all that went down in this house, right? The number of blows that we talked about. But this thing was over and done so quickly. I mean, they estimate that it could have taken less than a minute to deliver all these blows. It's unbelievable.
Yeah. Things happen quicker than people realize. And it's why it's hard for people to say, why didn't his dad react earlier? Why didn't his dad do this or that? He didn't have time to react.
No, it's like blink of the eye type stuff.
And there is some form of shock, you know, when you see something like that.
Because it's your son.
Yeah, you don't automatically think about how you're going to defend yourself.
So after his parents were dead, Tyler dragged his mother from where she ultimately died, put her next to his father, both face down, and he covered both of their heads with towels, and he placed the hammer between their bodies. So I think that's the question, you know, why would he cover their heads with towels? Did he feel remorse? Was this because he didn't want to look at them? You can bandy that question about until you get to what he does next. Tyler takes everything, and we really are talking about everything, and he piles it on top of his parents. So we're talking about dining room chairs, coffee table, clothes out of the closet, bed linens, mirrors from all around the house, pictures, towels, the contents of a 2-drawer filing cabinet with all of their important files. I mean, you name it. Whatever he could find, he took it in and threw it on top of his dead parents.
Just building a little mound.
But I think the key is it got to the point where if you looked into that room, you wouldn't immediately see a dead body or two dead bodies. You would just see a bunch of stuff. It would look like an episode of Hoarders or something. So after this, he spends the next 3 hours attempting to clean up the mess. And I don't know. I mean, this is Pulp Fiction type stuff here where they're trying to clean the brains out of that car.
Mr. Cleaner's on his way.
Yeah. That's not what his name is. The Wolf.
The Wolf. Professional cleaner.
Mr. Cleaner.
Mr. Cleaner. Mr. Clean.
That was a great movie.
It was good.
But that's, I mean, that's what we're talking about. I mean, blood everywhere. And I don't think people realize, and I'm not saying I have the experience, but I don't think people realize how hard a scene like that would be to clean up.
Very difficult.
Because you do realize.
It's very difficult.
Very difficult. To me, Gibbs, it's the reason why he's cleaning that is important. He's about ready to host a party. Right? We talked about it up front. So he takes a shower. He gets ready. He took some cash out of his parents' wallets. He had a friend go get booze for the party. And it's around 9 p.m. People start to come to the house. At first, maybe there's like 10 people. But at some point, this party grows to about 60. But from what I understand, Tyler was not the life of the party. I don't think Tyler was ever the life of any party. But especially here, he had just killed his mother and father.
Yeah.
You know, he's not out doing John Travolta from Saturday Night Fever. He's just not in that frame of mind. He knew what he had done. And at first, it was almost instinctually, he was asking people to smoke outside. But as the night wore on, he said he didn't care. Do whatever you want. People were putting out cigarettes on the furniture, on the floors. There was beer bottles and stuff all over the floor. Now, if you were a high school student at a party like that, what would you think? Are you telling me your parents are just away for a couple of days, they're going to be back, but you don't give a shit?
Yeah, you're okay with all this.
Something don't seem right. Some people did ask Tyler where his parents were, and he gave a bunch of different excuses. They're in Orlando. They're in Georgia. He did tell some people that he didn't live with his parents. That was his house. Nobody really questioned the fact that his parents' cars were in the driveway. Again, you know, 17, 18-year-old kids, they're not that smart.
They don't know. They're too busy about...
Or they don't care.
Drinking beer and...
Right. Free beer. Yeah. Probably drugs. Don't ask too many questions.
Yeah, don't worry about that smell.
No. No, and there was a smell at some point that, you know, people, I think, chalked some of it up to weed, which has a very distinctive smell.
It does.
More skunk-like than dead-like, I would think.
Yeah, but I agree.
Maybe it depends on what kind of weed you get. I don't know.
They got that new odorless weed now, so...
Do they?
No.
Oh. I was like, man, that's a good idea. If you could come up with that, that's a $1 billion idea. You know, my wife and I, we both use Rakuten when we shop online to help save money. My wife uses it more than I do because, well, let's face it, she shops more than I do. Rakuten is the most rewarding way to shop and save because members earn cash back on everything that they buy. Rakuten is a shopping platform that partners with over 3,500 stores across every category. You're already shopping at your favorite stores. Why not save while doing it? It really is a no-brainer. I use it for all my techie stuff at stores like Best Buy. My wife uses it at stores like Sephora and Macy. Best of all, membership is free and it's easy to sign up. It's very easy to use. Cashback rates change daily. So start all your shopping at Rakuten.com or get the Rakuten app to start saving today. Your cash back really adds up.
This episode is brought to you by June's Journey. Unleash your inner sleuth and step into the glamorous 1920s. Uncover scandalous family secrets and solve the mysterious murder of June Parker's sister. With dazzling hidden object scenes and riveting storylines in each chapter, June's Journey invites you to a thrilling era of mystery and romance. And now, June needs your help, detective. Download June's Journey for free today on iOS and Android. Your adventure awaits.
But around 10 p.m., He drove his dad's truck. He went to go pick up more friends for the party, including his best friend, Michael Mandel. Later, his friend said that he wasn't acting different. He didn't seem nervous. There was nothing, as far as they were concerned, that was really wrong with him. He seemed like any kid hosting a party. But you mentioned the smell, and obviously the house was getting pretty messed up. One person at the party later said that they tried to get into the master bedroom, noticed that it was locked. And of course, you know, Gibbs, if you're at a party and the door's locked, you think one of two things.
Yeah.
Either somebody's in there
getting it on,
or they're getting something else on. There's always going to be some kind of getting on.
Yeah. Why don't you want us in there?
Sex, drugs, whatever.
Yeah.
But this person also noticed that there was something that appeared to be oozing out from under the door. It looked like a black smear, almost like a black paint, is the way that they put it. Now, keep in mind, it had been about 5 hours since the murder, so this blood was really no longer red, right? It turned a blackish hue. This party kept going. 1:15 in the morning. Somebody at the party asked Tyler, you know, what the house rules were, and he said, there aren't any. Do whatever you want.
No rules here, man.
No rules.
Just don't touch the oozy. Don't touch the gooey, ooey stuff coming underneath the door.
Well, and it was. You know, at one point, they were playing a game of pong, beer pong, and the ball bounced onto the floor into this kind of blackish brown substance.
Yeah.
But nobody really thought much about it. They certainly didn't think it was blood. They washed the ball and kept playing their game.
Somebody had a drink right
Somebody had
that.
To drink that.
Yeah.
So the night goes on. Obviously, you're getting into the early morning hours. The party starts to dwindle down. And at one point, Tyler pulls his best friend Michael aside and asked him to go for a walk. This is his best friend. And on this walk, he confessed to Michael about everything he had done. And he went into every detail. How he killed his parents. Even, you know, like I do, Gibbs, with my hands, showing him how he came down with the blows of the hammer. At first, Michael didn't believe him. And what would you think if your best friend at 17 years old took you aside and said, hey, man, you're not going to believe what I just did. Yeah. You're not going to believe that.
No. Let me see the bodies.
Right. So Michael thought this was a joke. And this is not a good joke. It's a sick joke. You know, I think he thought his buddy was pretty high, had taken some pills, had a lot to drink. But Tyler starts to walk through some of the evidence, right? He shows Michael the cars in the driveway. There's a shoe print in the garage floor stamped in blood. There's blood spatter in the grout outside the master bedroom.
Oh, wow.
Because you can clean the floor.
Yeah, you can't get it out of grout, man.
But getting it out of that grout, that's a whole different story. Michael's still not sold. He thinks this is some kind of elaborate prank. Then Tyler goes around towards the back of the house. He forces open the door to his parents' room. And that's when Michael is able to see, under this huge pile of junk, Tyler's dad's leg. So now this is not a joke. It's real. And Michael couldn't dismiss it anymore. You would think that Michael would try to leave at this point. I mean, I would be Scooby-Dooing it out as quick as I'd be gone.
Yeah.
But this is his best friend. Although his best friend is a killer, what do you do? What Michael chose to do was stick around. And they even took a selfie together, he and Tyler. And you can see it. It's out there. At this point, I think they both knew, right? Michael knew this was the last night he would ever spend with his best friend, and vice versa. Tyler knew that he was either going away for a long time or he was going to take his own life, because he had been telling people both, right?
After he told me, I didn't believe him because he's been my best friend forever. I would never suspect anything like this. And I was looking around. He told me if I look at enough, I can see signs. I looked on the floor. I could see signs of blood. And that's when I went around back and looked in his parents' bedroom. I saw bloody sheets piled everywhere. I saw broken pictures with blood on them, and I looked down and I saw his dad's leg.
Mandel says the two have been friends for years, though Hadley started getting into trouble around the age of 15. He says Hadley complained of arguing with his parents and claimed that rap music and his parents' financial troubles influenced his actions. And Mandel says Hadley took ecstasy on the day of the killings. Mandel wanted one last picture with his longtime friend.
After I found his parents, I knew it was going to be the last time I seen him. This is that look on his face. You could see the horror on his in his face. That's not normal, Tyler.
Knew he went too far.
Well, so the part of that clip, the reason why I wanted to leave her in talking was she said, so obviously he took ecstasy, which we talked about, but Tyler said that rap music and his parents' financial situation caused him to kill. That makes no sense whatsoever. No. He hated his parents, and that's why he killed them. He told everybody that.
That's the bottom line.
But that, obviously, that was Michael, right? Talking about finding the bodies, talking about taking the picture. At around 2 a.m., neighbors start to get ticked off by the noise level. I'm surprised they made it that long to 2 a.m. They call police. Within minutes, police show up. The parties die down substantially. You know, there's only about 20 people or so left. When the officers rang the doorbell, Tyler told everyone to be quiet and hide in his room.
It just makes me, it's something kids would do.
Well, sure.
Yeah, everybody, quiet, get down. Like they're not going to, like they walked up and didn't hear all that before they rang the doorbell.
But it worked, right? So the police officers, they say, hey, what's going on? Tyler said, oh, not much. Can you turn the music down? Sure. They let him go, right? They don't know that he's killed anybody. They don't know that he's done anything super bad. At around 2:30 a.m., his friend Michael left. But before he left, he took a bag of around 10 Percocet pills that he said later he thought Tyler would use to kill himself. And he hid them in a hallway closet where he didn't think Tyler would find them. 4:24 a.m., Michael anonymously reports Tyler's confession to Crime Stoppers. And I'm not sure, Gibbs, that may have been some of what we heard in the beginning. Maybe. I'm not positive. You know, I think the question is, why would Michael call Crime Stoppers and not the police? Well, you call the police, you don't get any money. Call Crime Stoppers, they pay you money.
They do pay you money. Yeah.
I'm assuming that's the reason why. Didn't take long. Right. By 4:32, the police are notified. 4:40, Tyler posts on Facebook again. Party at my house again. Hit me up. This kid really believes that he's going to be partying again that night.
Part due
of the party. What he doesn't know is at the time he's sending this Facebook post, police are outside his door. And they can see Tyler inside the house. He's walking back and forth. He's talking to himself. They said that he looked like he was very disturbed. He had a disturbed look on his face. They also said that he was taking stacks of books from a bookshelf near the front door and going towards that back bedroom, and he's just flinging them in there. And after a couple of times, they knock on the door. Tyler turns off all the lights. He tries to pull that same kind of ploy again, and he waits. Then he answers the door. When the officer sees his hand hidden behind his back, he pulls his gun on him.
Yeah.
I don't blame him. He's been made aware that this kid's killed his parents. He doesn't know what he's got. When the officer asks Tyler if his parents are home, he says no. Now, the police have already run the plates on both the cars in the driveway. They know who they belong to. They handcuff him. They enter the house. They start to go towards the back bedroom. And Tyler screams, "You can't go in there. Don't go in there."
That's the last thing you ever want to say to a police officer.
Well, that's the first place they're going to go. Imagine this kid. He knows. He knows it's over. When they got into the room, they noticed streaks of dried blood on the frame, on the baseboards, but the door is locked. And so they have to force it open and they have to start moving all these items. You know, eventually they do see the leg of a male covered in blood and the body is cold. And then they find Tyler's dogs. You know, they find a black lab named Sophie locked in the closet. They find an older, partially deaf and blind beagle in Ryan's room, hiding under the bed, terrified. But at least he didn't hurt the dogs.
Didn't touch the doggies.
It would take police 5 days to fully process the scene. And when the news came out, the whole community was in shock. And this was right around the time that Casey Anthony was found not guilty. So if you're putting it in the context of other, you know, shocking crimes, the funeral for Blake and Mary Jo was attended by almost 1,000 people.
Well, that's a big number.
It is.
Yeah.
So 1,000 people came out to pay their respects. Yeah, I always just wonder, Gibbs, did they have that many friends? I highly doubt it. You know, are these people that really didn't know them that came out because they're sad about, you know, the circumstances, or because it's on the news?
I think a little bit of both.
I think you have to have some of that, right? Yeah. Some looky-loos that would maybe attend a funeral because of the notoriety of the murders.
Yeah. What will I see at the viewing, right? And what kind of drama will be at the funeral, right? That's what they're looking for. The looky-loos.
The looky-loos. And I know there has to be some of that because people just don't die and have thousands of people usually attend their funeral. I mean, even if you're a great person, that seems like a lot.
I mean, you probably have a lot. You have the carnies that will show up.
The furries.
The furries. And the other people that you pushed away from the podcast that will be like,
well,
we finally got our revenge.
You're going to hear later on, I'm not sure on which one, but the Ford Fiesta owners are mad at me now too.
Oh, and it was so funny.
It's on Unsolved, I'm pretty sure.
Today when I was coming here. When I pulled out of the office parking lot, you know how there's many ways to get in that parking lot. Mm-hmm. One car in front of me was a Fiesta.
Ford Fiesta.
One of the older ones. A new one like whipped in behind me, and I thought, it's going down. It's going down.
The Ford Fiesta.
Heard about it, and they're gonna.
Had one in front of you and one behind you?
Yeah, what's the odds, man? I was like, what's happening here?
Well, we'll talk about it more on Unsolved.
Yeah.
So Tyler pleaded no contest to both counts of first-degree murder with a weapon.
Can you just state your name for the record, please?
Tyler Hadley.
After 8 days, we hear from Tyler Hadley for 86 seconds.
I'd like to direct this to my entire family. All of them. Everyone. All of them.
Hadley told the court he can't apologize or make amends for the horrible acts he committed.
Not a single day goes by that I don't think about my parents or my whole family that I've affected by this.
Hadley said he realizes he took away a son, father, a mother, a sister, a brother, and two friends.
I know I don't expect forgiveness, and I know they'll never forgive me, and I'm not expecting forgiveness.
Public defender Diamond Liddy asked the judge for two concurrent 30-year sentences with a case review after 20 years. She said Tyler Hadley's crimes were not those of an adult.
In fact, it is the state's evidence that shows this was the result of a severely mentally ill child.
In his closing remarks, Chief Assistant State Attorney Tom Bacadal called Hadley a manipulator and a cold-blooded killer trying to now throw himself on the mercy of the court.
He is done. No jury in the world would buy the insanity defense in this case.
The state is looking for Hadley to get life without the possibility of parole.
So I like that clip for two reasons. First, you got to hear Tyler talk in the beginning. And then on that broadcast, they actually did a pretty good job of laying out, you know, what the prosecution was after, what the defense was after. The sentencing hearing took about 2 weeks. And, you know, at that point, Tyler was almost 18 years old. And they thought he deserved two life sentences. They said it was premeditated murder. This was not, you know, some situation where he just snapped all of a sudden. You heard the defense say, this is a kid. This is a kid with mental issues, and he deserves no more than, you know, 30 years to be reviewed after 20 or whatever they said. And the prosecution won. He was sentenced to, you know, two concurrent life sentences. So he's in prison. Tyler got his GED, but, you know, he's still a young kid, essentially, and he was doing young kid type of stuff. He was smoking weed. He was making shivs or shanks, however you want to say.
Shiv a shank?
Shiv a shank or shank a shiv. Either one, I think. At one point, I read Gibbs that he autographed a picture of a hammer for a fellow inmate with the caption, "I don't know if you're a fan, but you should be. It's hammer time." That's not somebody that is sorry at all about their actions, no. Feels bad about what they've done. You know, other inmates were calling him Hambo, like Hammer Rambo.
Hammer Rambo.
I don't get it. I don't get it. You know, how can you stand up there and say, "Oh, I feel bad for what I've done. I know I've caused everybody a bunch of pain," and then do a bunch of stupid stuff like this. It just does not make sense. In 2012, the Supreme Court issued a ruling which barred automatic mandatory life prison terms for minors, which Tyler Hadley technically was, right? He was 17 years old at the time that he committed the murders. So basically what the U.S. Supreme Court said was that individual state judges would have the responsibility of resentencing a whole bunch of teenagers that had been sentenced to life, like a mandatory life, when they were minors. Tyler Hadley was one of those teenagers. And it was on March 20th, 2014, that a judge sentenced him to essentially the same thing, Gibbs, two concurrent life terms.
"At this point, whether or not he will receive that effective treatment and can be rehabilitated is anyone's guess. Guess whether he will commit crimes or violent acts in the future are also guesses. It's too soon to tell. Conclusion. Based on a careful consideration of the statutory factors, the relevant case law, the evidence the court concludes as follows. Evidence of Hadley's youth, maturity, and mental health are not sufficiently persuasive to mitigate the severity of his crimes. The appropriate sentence for Hadley is life for the murders of his parents. Accordingly, it is hereby ordered and adjudged that Tyler Joseph Hadley's prior adjudication for two first-degree murders remain intact as originally pronounced. It is further ordered and adjudged that Tyler Joseph Hadley be remanded into the custody of the Florida Department of Corrections for the remainder of his life as to both counts, each to run concurrent with the other."
He had another hearing in 2018 to essentially determine whether, you know, that ruling should be overturned. And there were some new facts that came out about his mental state. There was a mental health expert that testified. This guy, the psychiatrist, had done a psychiatric evaluation of Tyler and concluded that he had been operating for some time under the delusion of what he called a severe mental illness caused by depression and worsened by obsessive thoughts of killing his parents and himself. But during this hearing, they still determined that his two life sentences should stay. So as it stands, barring some kind of, you know, miracle, Tyler Hadley will never see the light of day.
Right.
And I don't believe he should.
No, he shouldn't.
Ryan Hadley, his brother, has written a book about this whole thing. It's called 1,000 Fireflies. And people always ask about the house. Right. What happened to this house where this kid killed his two parents and then he threw a kegger? The house was demolished, which you think, Gibbs, that's the right thing to do.
Yeah.
Doesn't always happen.
Go ahead and level it.
That's what I think. Yeah. I think if you can, you should, because if not, it's just a reminder of something horrible.
Yeah. It's just a tragic event.
Yeah. If you can level it, at least, you know, I don't know, shit, put a park in there, do something.
Something.
Plant some trees, whatever
it is. Something positive.
But I don't know. I mean, you know, these cases, they get to me. I've said it before. Kids killing their parents. This one, I don't know. It's so far out of left field. I feel like, and maybe there were some underlying things that we couldn't find. I feel like this guy had a pretty good set of parents.
Yeah.
I feel like they were trying to help him, guide him down the right path. To be a good kid, the one thing I do wonder, and it wouldn't make it right, but what kind of mental illness did this guy really have? Because, you know, one psychiatrist has said he did. It does seem like he was having some some issues going on that make you think there was some type of mental health issue with Hadley.
I just think about, as a parent, you know, you should never have to worry about your kids harming you.
No.
And as the episode we've done previously with the, you know, parent harming their kid. I mean, just when you're with your family unit, you just never have to worry about harm. That's your safe zone, you know, in your house with the ones you love.
Yeah, I think it goes both ways.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, we see way too often that it doesn't. Parents are willing to harm their children, and children are willing to harm their parents.
Yeah.
All right, but that is it. It's it for the case of Tyler Hadley. You add on top of it the fact that he just thought he was going to party the night away, which he did.
Yeah.
And would have had another party, I think, that next night if the police don't show up.
He would have.
Very odd. We got some voicemails.
Let's hear them.
Want to check those out?
Hi, Mike. Hi, Gibby. This is Mikhail from Iowa here. I've been listening to your podcast for a little while now. I've just been binge-watching it all day, every day. I actually just got done listening to episode 104 here, so I just figured I'd about time I should give you guys a call since I've been blasting through all your episodes here. I really love the podcast. Definitely say Team Fergie here. I'm a MediaCom technician, so I just spend all day climbing up poles and listening to you guys while I'm there, so figure you guys get a kick out of the climbing poles. Heard Gibby make that joke before, so just wanted to call you guys, say how much I love the podcast, and wanted to say keep on doing what you're doing. Keep your own time a ticking. Have a good one, guys. Bye.
Love that. Team, love that voicemail.
Team Fergie from Term, the pole climber.
Team Fergie, very articulate. The minute he said pole climber, you started giggling like a schoolgirl.
Ah, it's pole climber.
I saw you. I watched you.
Pole climber. No,
but he cool. knew you would. That's how smart he is.
He is smart.
He knew that you would get a kick out of it.
To the point and you when did. He says Team Fergie, mm-hmm. he does that because he's really Team Gibby. That's how smart he is. He's playing into your pseudo-ego.
Hey, can you not let me have one person, man?
All right.
One person.
Hey, Mike. Hey, Gibby. This is Nicole from Oklahoma City. I am somewhat of a new fan. I've listened to all of the episodes on both True Crime All the Time and True Crime All the Time Unsolved. As far as being Team Mike or Team Gibby, I have to say I am probably Team Gibby, but Mike, I still love you too. This is my Sunday night ritual. My cat and I will curl up on the bed, listen to the episodes, and then we go to sleep. That's our every weekend Sunday night ritual. And I think you guys are fantastic. I love the work that you do. I think you give the victims a voice. And I hope that you guys are around for a long time. Keep your own time ticking. Thanks, guys.
Well, that's what I do on Sunday nights. I curl up without the cat. Without the cat and without T-Cat, I just curl up. Similar.
It's very similar.
Yeah.
Very similar. But we appreciate that. And we hope we're around for a long time, too.
Yeah, we do.
I've said it before. As long as people want to hear us, we'll do the show. The minute people say, we don't want to hear you anymore.
We'll still do the show.
We'll still do the show.
Yeah. So there you go.
We're going to do it no matter what.
Hey, Ferg. Hey, Gibby. I just want to thank you for making me laugh all the time while bringing this back. The Ed Gein episode, the first one especially, normally I'm Team Gibb, but Ferg, you were cracking me up with the skin suit. The second one, I wasn't laughing so hard because it was about the victims mostly, but the Fruit Loop bone bowl, that I will never look at cereal the same. And Ferg, you've definitely been on a roll because then on the episode this week, and you talked about having no teeth in the jack-o'-lantern, I actually had a dream last night that my teeth fell out. So I think I'm thinking of T-Cat too much. But anyways, I love you guys. You guys crack me up, even when it's such serious subject. So thanks for helping my day go by much faster while I'm at work. And take care of yourself and keep your own time ticking. I just left a voicemail and I realized I forgot to use my name. So this is Maureen DeCoco from Las Vegas. And again, thanks again for all that you do. Team Ferg and Team Gibb.
You know, when you got one, man, you knock it out of the park. You know, that's how you are. You go big or you go home.
Oh, yeah.
Jack-o'-lantern. Yeah. And
being chased by a damn jack-o'-lantern. Yeah. I have some good ones every now and then. You and I talk about this, not always on the air, but off the air. We don't set out to be funny.
No, we don't.
If there's a place to lighten the mood, we try to find it or take it or whatever. Some stories are just way harder than others.
Yeah.
They don't, you know, that opportunity doesn't present itself, but maybe once or twice. Sometimes you might have 5, 6, 7. It just depends. Yeah. We don't sit down and try to say we're going to be funny 10 times. It just doesn't. Just
kind of happens.
Whenever it happens, it happens.
Yeah.
Hey, Mike and Gibby. This is Travis from Kansas City calling in. First off, love the podcast. Listen to it literally every day while I'm driving for work. Got a request for you. Big case. A lot of other podcasts covered it. The Atlanta Child Murders. I would love to hear your guys' take on it. It's a case that I think fascinates everybody, and you know, people want more answers, and there's a lot of questions that get raised with it. But I gotta ask a bigger request. I saw your post from CrimeCon with a picture with Nick and the Captain from True Crime Garage. You and them are my two favorite true crime podcasts out there. I would love for you guys to do a joint episode. I think I speak for a lot of people to say that that would probably be the biggest mic drop moment in true crime podcasts yet. So see if we can make it happen, guys. I think a lot of people would love it. Thanks again.
Gotta make it happen, Kevin.
Yeah.
So we may or may not have talked with those guys about doing just that.
Yeah, and it may or may not be the murderer called Dexter.
I can't confirm, can't deny. But no, we really like those guys, and we have a lot of fun with them. We've said for a long time, actually every year we say we should do something, and then I think time just gets away. We both get busy doing our own stuff, and yeah. But I think we're going to try to make it happen.
Really wasn't cool what the captain did, though, slicing my tires.
Yeah, he's a little miffed at you.
Yeah. Don't understand that.
He thinks you're honing in on his business.
Yeah, but those are new tires, man.
All right, man. That is it. We had no mailbag today.
What? No jerky?
No, because we're taping very, very early.
Oh. Because I ate all that jerky already.
Because I'm leaving town, so... That is it for another episode of True Crime All the Time. So for Mike
and Gibby,
stay safe and keep your own time ticking. I want to tell everybody about a game that I've been playing recently called Two Dots. You know, primarily Two Dots is a puzzle-based game. You have to connect at least two dots of the same color to make a move. And then those connected dots are removed from the game area, and the dots above them drop down until they hit other dots or the floor beneath. But there's a variety of game modes. There's this really cool one called Scavenger Hunt, which is a really relaxing hidden object game. There's different levels to the game that are grouped into worlds, and it's very satisfying to move up. There's over 5,000 unique puzzles and fun levels, and with all the different gameplay modes, it really makes the gaming experience unique and exciting with every single puzzle. The visuals are amazing, and the in-game music I found to be very soothing. You can even challenge your friends on Facebook to make it competitive, link up, and see how your dot skills match up. And best of all, it's free to download, and you don't need Wi-Fi to play it. You can play it offline as well. Think you have what it takes to solve some fun puzzles? Download Two Dots now for free on Android or iOS.